place was Tadfield. He was certain of that, partly from the book, partly from some other sense. In Crowley's mental map of the world, Tadfield was throbbing like a migraine. The right time was getting there before the end of the world. He checked his watch. He had 2 hours to get to Tadfield, although probably even the normal passage of time was pretty shaky by now. Crowley tossed the book into the passenger seat. Desperate times, desperate measures. He had maintained the Bentley without a scratch for 60 years. What the hell? He reversed, suddenly, causing severe damage to the front of a red Renault 5 behind him, and drove up onto the pavement. He turned on his lights and sounded his horn. That should give any pedestrian sufficient warning that he was coming, and if they couldn't get out of the way, well, it'd all be the same in a couple of hours. Maybe. Probably. Hey-ho, said Anthony Crowley, and just drove anyway. There were 6 women and 4 men, and each of them had a telephone and a thick wadge of computer printout covered with names and telephone numbers. By each of the numbers was a penned notation saying whether the person dialed was in or out, whether the number was currently connected, and, most importantly, whether or not anybody who answered the phone was avid for cavity wall insulation to enter their lives. Most of them weren't. The 10 people sat there, hour after hour, cajoling, pleading, promising through plastic smiles. Between calls they made notations, sipped coffee, and marvelled at the rain flooding down the windows. They were staying at their posts like the band on the Titanic. If you couldn't sell double glazing in weather like this, you couldn't sell it at all. Lisa Morrow was saying, "Now, if you'll only let me finish, sir, and yes, I understand that, sir, but if you'll only..." And then, seeing that he just hung up on her, she said, "Well, up yours, snotface." She put down the phone. "I got another bath," she announced to her fellow telephone salespersons. She was well in the lead of the office daily getting people out of the bath stakes and only needed 2 more points to win the weekly Coitus Interruptus Award. She dialed the next number on the list. Lisa had never intended to be a telephone salesperson. What she really wanted to be was an internationally glamorous jet-setter, but she didn't have the O-levels. Had she been studious enough to be accepted as an internationally glamorous jet-setter, or a dental assistant, her second choice of profession, or indeed anything other than a telephone salesperson in that particular office, she would have had a longer and probably more fulfilled life. Perhaps not a very much longer life, all things considered, it being the day of Armageddon, but several hours anyway. For that matter, all she really needed to do for a longer life was not ring the number she had just dialed, listed on her sheet as the Mayfair home of, in the best traditions of 10th hand mail order lists, Mr. A.J. Cowley. But she had dialed. And she had waited while it rang 4 times. And she had said, "Oh, poot, another answer phone," and made to put down the handset. But then something climbed out of the earpiece, something very big and very angry. It looked a little like a maggot, a huge, angry maggot made out of thousands and thousands of tiny little maggots, all writhing and screaming, millions of little maggot mouths opening and shutting in fury, and every one of them was screaming, "Crowley!" It stopped screaming, swayed blindly, seemed to be taking stock of where it was. Then it went to pieces. The thing split into thousands of writhing grey maggots. They flowed over the carpet, up over the desks, over Lisa Morrow and her 9 colleagues. They flowed into their mouths, up their nostrils, into their lungs. They burrowed into flesh and eyes and brains and lights, reproducing wildly as they went, filling the room with a towering mess of writhing flesh and gunk. The whole began to flow together, to coagulate into one huge entity that filled the room from floor to ceiling, pulsing gently. A mouth opened in the mass of flesh, strands of something wet and sticky adhering to each of the not exactly lips, and Hastur said, "I needed that." Spending 30 minutes trapped on an answer phone with only Aziraphale's message for company had not improved his temper. Neither did the prospect of having to report back to hell and having to explain why he hadn't returned 30 minutes earlier and, more importantly, why he was not accompanied by Crowley. Hell did not go a bundle on failures. On the plus side, however, he at least knew what Aziraphale's message was. The knowledge could probably buy him his continued existence. And anyway, he reflected, if he were going to have to face the possible wrath of the Dark Council, at least it wouldn't be on an empty stomach. The room filled with thick, sulphurous smoke. When it cleared, Hastur was gone. There was nothing left in the room but 10 skeletons, picked quite clean of meat, and some puddles of melted plastic with, here and there a gleaming fragment of